Jason, could you just put this text sort of in a nice way? On the... Yeah, and that one goes at the back, that one goes at the front. But they're both resting on the cloth somehow.
So have you got everything that you had wiped off or something? Yeah. So maybe tomorrow we could listen to the Chinese version?
Yeah, sure. That's on.
So do you want to give me that back now?
Yeah. Okay.
Ta. Better in yeah, that's perfect, huh? Thanks. Perfect balance, perfect wisdom. Yeah, that's fine, thanks. So the next thing to chant is the verses from the Ornament for Clear Realizations. So this is our root text, but although it's all translated into English, and I think you've got three sample chapters that you can read from the official FPMT version, so these are just verses I tried quickly to translate, at least so we could chant a little bit of it. Because, you know, the chanting is part of meeting the perfection of wisdom. It's not just all the intellectual ideas that are also complicated and, you have to have really sharp faculties to get the grasp of everything. But it's, meeting the beauty of it in many ways, isn't it? The sound of it. And yesterday, Jane and I were in the library, British Library, looking at some ancient versions of the Perfection of Wisdom, you know, written out, or early printings of the written version of these texts. So they're marvelous to see, but more about that later. So meet the perfection of wisdom in all the ways that you can. Don't just think of it as something that is just going to be approached through your conceptual rational mind. Enjoy, let it seep in, let it sink in just by repeating the words, or it's often recommended to write out the words yourself, you know, to produce your own version if you've got beautiful handwriting. So this is also highly recommended as a meritorious act. So let's just chant these few verses as a sort of a token effort. Verses from the Ornament for Clear Realizations. These are all from the first chapter. It's sort of explanatory what they are. I put little headings in on the side now. Who has the honor of all is she who leads the hearer seeking peace to utter peace, who as the knot of paths makes those who work the good of beings achieve the world's welfare, and well endowed with whom the sages teach on this all aspected variety, I bow down to the mother of the Buddha, and here a bodhisattva companies. The pathway of the knot of aspects all the teacher has expounded here, though it's by others not experienced, so that it's seen by those with sense. Once they have set in mind the sutra's theme, in essence the ten dharma deeds, the easy realization of them is the purpose why this is composed. Perfection of wisdom is thoroughly expounded in 8 categories. The nor of all aspects itself, the nor of part, the nor of all, for realization of all aspects and gone to the peak and serially, an instantaneous full enlightenment, and Dharma body, these the 8. My generation guidance, the 4 limbs of definite discrimination, foundation of achievings, that which has the nature of the Dharma element, observed intent and then activities of armor and engaging and collections, final issuance, these are the sages, nor of aspects all, with aspects training qualities and faults, marks part concord with liberty, discrimination to and company of irreversible trainees, the sameness of mundane existence, peace and unsurpassably pure lands, along with skillful means as well, this is for realizing of aspects all, with nature and complete enjoyment both, so to the other emanation, the Dharma body with activities, it in 4 aspects is proclaimed. My generation is for others' sake, the wish for full enlightenment, as it is in the sutra, this and that are set out briefly and at length. Moreover, earth and gold and moon and fire, a treasure jewel mine, a sea, a vajra mountain medicine, close friend, wish granting gem, a sun, a song, a monarch treasury and thoroughfare, a vehicle and a fountain and a pleasant sound, a river and a cloud. With these its types are 22. So you get the idea? There's one verse at the end I was just translating. You know the verse when we do a dedication, but you can use it at any time, of course. Tibetans use the Bodhicitta verse at the bottom I'm talking about, right? So the Tibetans always use this one when they go on demonstrations. You know, when somebody gets killed or, you know, several people get killed in Tibet. Tibetans, you know, we all had to sort of turn out of the monastery and everybody has to do a demonstration, you know, go down to the Lower Bazaar to protest in front of the police station. Just something to let off steam, you know. So always when they're chanting on these sort of political protests, they would always, you know, everybody marches down chanting this verse. So this is their, like, the theme tune of their demonstrations. So, you know the verse I mean? Jan Cho Sem Cho Rinpoche Ma Kye Pa Nam Kye Go Chik, yeah? That one. So just try to chant that. Bodhicitta, precious mind, where not born may it be born, where born may it not decline, only increase more and more. So that's very much a theme of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. So we have to meditate on that again today. All beings have been our mothers. We're all mothers of each other. So let's bring that meditation to the full, if we can. So then we want, what is it, mandala. So that's bottom of page 16. And then refuge, you find refuge before the teaching, yeah, so that's the best one, is on page 20. So the merit, through the merit I create, through listening to the Dharma, we can say.
Sajipaki Jukshin Matotra Rirablin Jinida Gya Sangye chedan sogi chognam la janchu badu dadni kapsu chi dagi chishye gipe sonanki drola penche sangye drupa shok Sangye chedan sogi chognam la janchu badu dadni kapsu chi dagi chishye gipe sonanki drola penche sangye drupa shok Sangye chedan sogi chognam la janshu badu dani kapsu chi dagi chishye gipe sonam ki drola penche sangye drupa sho.
So in that verse, line three, you're saying dagi chir nyen, right? So through the power of listening, you know, to the Dharma, may... You know, that merit, may I become Buddha. So I'm saying chi she, dagi chi she, through the power of speaking the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So if you, where it's written nyen, you should say nyen, but I'm saying she, so don't be confused. Okay, so that's a few preliminaries. So last week we started off by, you know, emphasizing suffering. That's just the first words I came out with, that's all. I mean, we didn't spend the whole weekend talking about suffering, but just as a motivation, why are we studying this teaching? So that's obviously, you know, Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth is the truth of suffering. So we all know where we're going. But the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra is just that the whole emphasis changes, not just... you know, the specific sufferings of the individual, the one individual, but what about all sufferings, you know? So this is the bodhicitta bandwagon. So that's why we should call each other, we're all, address each other as mother here, because this is definitely what the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras are bringing in, you know? What are the means by which we can make all beings as dear to us as ourselves, or dearer, if possible? And what are the means by which, you know, we can sort of wrench our consciousness away from self-cherishing and get down to, you know, the much more beneficial other cherishing. Self-cherishing is one of those sort of slightly awkward-sounding English translations, isn't it? Self-cherishing. It's not something it's a phrase we use in ordinary English, but there's nothing wrong with it, really, is there? Selfishness, self-centeredness is fine. Self-cherishing is just convenient because it sort of opposes other cherishing quite nicely, you know, in sort of contrast in language. So maybe we could meditate again on bodhicitta at the end of the afternoon. Six causes and one effect, I think. So we're still thinking very much of all beings as being our mothers. This is one of the themes of the day, got to be. We did talk about it last week. Last month, didn't we? So thank you for your efforts in coming forward with your kind of descriptions of the stages of that meditation. Very nice. So that was useful for me to hear your voices. But it did say, at this point we're saying, thinking of the kindness of our mothers. Yeah? On that piece of paper you had, it said the kindness of others. So somehow it got miswritten down. So the person... you know, trying to give the talk on that little point, remembering the kindness of others, it should have been remembering the kindness of mothers, yeah. So we'll get on to exchanging yourself on others, yeah, the kindness of all others. That's certainly another way to meditate. But just pointing that out. So what do the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras say on this? You know, it doesn't give those six, you know, the six scores and one effect that I've seen in any of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. It doesn't go through the whole list. So it leaves you to work that out. It leaves the later commentators to work out. So I'm just going to read how it comes in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. Maybe one of you noticed in your readings from the 25,000 line Perfection of Wisdom Sutra last month, did you notice any reference to the attitude one must have to all one's fellow creatures? Did you come across it in the bit you were reading? So it's not plastered all over, is it? But it does come somewhere. I've read it somewhere in this Perfection of Wisdom. This is the 25,000 line Perfection of Wisdom, middle length, we could say, the middling one. This is the 100,000 line, the extensive one. How many volumes, Mike? 12. And this is the brief one, the 8,000 line. But of course, those are only the three main ones, let's say. You know, there's the Heart of Wisdom Sutra, and also they're all included. And I thought, you know, the... Oh, never mind, we must get on. So this is one place I found it in the book, that sort of the method, the action towards the conventional mind of Bodhicitta. So somebody is asking Subhuti, you know, if this Bodhisattva is not produced, if he doesn't exist, then how does he go on the difficult pilgrimage? You know, the pilgrimage to enlightenment, if you say nothing exists, etc., etc. Yeah? So then Subhuti gives the answer. I do not look for a Bodhisattva who goes on the difficult pilgrimage. In any case, one who courses in the perception of difficulties is not a Bodhisattva, because one who has generated a perception of difficulties is unable to work for the wheel of countless beings. On the contrary, he forms the notion of ease. He forms the notion that all beings, whether men or women, are his parents and children. And thus he goes on the pilgrimage of a Bodhisattva. A Bodhisattva should therefore identify all beings with his parents or children. Yes, even with his own self, like this. As I myself want to be quite free from all sufferings, just so all beings want to be quite free from sufferings. In addition, with regard to all beings, one should form the notion, I ought not to desert all these beings. I ought to set them free from the quite measureless heap of sufferings. I should not produce towards them a thought of hate, even though I might be dismembered 100 times. It is thus that a Bodhisattva should lift up his heart. When he dwells as one whose heart is such, then he will neither course nor dwell as one who perceives difficulties. So it just carries on a bit about the emptiness side again now. So I'll just read a little bit more. And further, a Bodhisattva should produce the thought that, as in each and every way a self does not exist and is not got at, so in each and every way all dharmas do not exist and are not got at. He should apply this notion to all dharmas, inside and outside. When he dwells as one whose heart is such, then he will neither course nor dwell as one who perceives difficulties. But when the Venerable Shariputra said that a non-production is a bodhisattva, indeed it is so. A non-production is the bodhisattva. Shariputra, so this is the questioner. Further, is just a bodhisattva a non-production, or the dharmas also which constitute him? Subhuti, the dharmas which constitute a bodhisattva are also a non-production. Shariputra, are just the dharmas which constitute a bodhisattva a non-production, or also the state of all knowledge? Subhuti, the state of all knowledge is also a non-production. Shariputra, is just the state of all knowledge a non-production, or also the dharmas which constitute it? Subhuti, the dharmas which constitute all knowledge are also a non-production. Shariputra, are just the dharmas which constitute all knowledge a non-production, or also the common people? Subhuti, the common people are also a non-production. Shariputra,
are just the common people, a non-production, or also the dharmas which constitute them. Subhuti, the dharmas which constitute the common people are also a non-production. So it goes on. Yeah. So and we'll stop there. Oh, this last bit. But, says Subhuti, non-production is just talk. Non-production just appears before the mind's eye. Non-production is just a flash in the mind. Absolutely, it is nothing more than that. So you can see the Pervasive Wisdom Sutras leave us wondering, don't they? But that's just a reference to the you know, the conventional side of bodhicitta there, from the 8,000 verse Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. So it's not kind of sort of ready-made meals here. It's not like a pot noodle you just pour in water. So you have to do a bit of work to fathom out the meaning. So then it'll mean so much more when you. It's not a quick process that's just, the easy way of doing things we might look for in this modern age. But yeah, you know, I'm quite happy to say that there's a lot that you'll look for in the Vivekananda Wisdoms and you will despair of understanding. I don't know how many of you have opened the handbook from the FBMT. Sort of the official material on the chapter 4. So it's that large thing with the binding. It doesn't seem to be a copy for me anywhere, but never mind. No, I'm not going to, I don't need it now, but just that's the one I mean anyway. You know, if you've looked at that and said, well, what's all this fourth chapter about? You might have quickly closed the book in horror. Is that true? Or you never even opened it anyway, you were too busy. So I'm just saying that while we have to work and do a bit of spade work to extract the kind of meaning out of the Perfection of Wisdom, I'm also saying that don't expect to understand everything. You know, just don't imagine that you've got to go to the restaurant and order every dish on the menu. You just don't do that. You just would just have a selection. So even if you studied it for 7 years, there'll be quite bits of it you've never even looked at. So it's not a kind of a methodical progress through the whole text, as I said. But anyway, here we are. We're going to have a little look at it. We've been parachuted down into the fourth chapter, the zong of the fourth chapter. Do you remember what I meant by zong? Yeah, it's the high fortress on top, overlooking the city. If you want an example in the Britain, go to Edinburgh. That's a zong. That's a real zong. Edinburgh Castle, yeah? So we parachuted down there, just right in the middle of things. So we're looking from there, trying to get our bearings. So we're looking ahead first. Or we're looking where we're supposed to have come from, which is from the first chapter, right? Then we can look ahead, to the final glory of the eighth chapter. But for now, we're just still looking, where the path leads up to the fourth chapter. So this fortress where all the kind of, best bits or the sort of the whole of the ornament of clear realization is in a way condensed into the fourth chapter, in a way. But anyway, so that's Edinburgh Castle for you. The fortress of the Lothians. Anybody from Scotland? You've heard of the Lothians, have you? You have West Lothian, Mid Lothian, East Lothian, so Zong of Edinburgh overlooks the Lothians, right? So who do the Lothians loathe then? British, the English, right? Yeah, we know, it's all right. Yeah, so that's something to do with, just a preview. I mean, a review. We've got to review a bit, haven't we? So what we did last time, so just keep nibbling at the edges of this thing, There'll be some plums in there somewhere, right? What else do we say then? So yes, the ornament is there because the Perfection of Wisdom is there. The Perfection of Wisdom Sutras need explaining. So the ornament is this specific commentary bringing out the hidden meaning of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. What's the explicit meaning of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras? Emptiness. Who talked about those? Who talked about those meanings?
Nagarjuna, his commentaries, Nagarjuna, his commentaries discover the emptiness. But the hidden meaning is commentated on by the perfection of wisdom, by the ornament for clear realizations. Composed by whom? Maitreya. Yes. Who received the teachings from Maitreya in Tushita heaven? Asanga. Yes. Anybody know his dates? I found in a book by, Well, I found in a book by Robert Thurman this morning, he says that his Asanga lived from a common era 294 to 376. So much earlier than that. You know, that's probably being a bit bold to put it quite so precisely. But, Thurman's willing to give it a go. So, these are two streams of commentary. It doesn't mean that when we study the Ornament for Clear Realizations, we won't study the view side, not at all. Because when we're studying the Ornament for Clear Realizations in the traditional way, in the Geshe Studies program, it's not that you only study the grounds and the paths and the stages and the levels of the concentrations and so forth. No, you do study the view. You don't study the final view. You don't study the Nagarjuna's consequentialist sort of view that Tsongkhapa's praising so highly, the final view. But you study the other views that come before that. So we have the view of the sutra follower schools, the view of the individual vehicle schools. You remember those? We haven't discussed them, but we will do. So they're sort of the view of just going to individual liberation primarily, And then we have the views of the mind-only school and the autonomy middle way school. So they are Mahayana schools. So they're following the Mahayana teachings of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, but extracting different sort of understandings from them, different versions of emptiness. You see, so we're building up to the final view of the consequentialist by studying the views of these earlier or sort of lesser schools and finding discovering that they don't quite meet your expectations. They don't quite satisfy. They find they have these sort of internal contradictions. So you're sort of left thinking, well. You're sort of forced to go even more radical, even more kind of amazing view of the consequentialist, because all the other views just don't have that kind of logical coherence to make them the final resting place. They're just sort of stepping stones to a higher view. For those who are ready for them, Buddha teaches many different views for people of many different abilities. So that's very much how our tradition is teaching these things, yeah? All these other views are not sort of just wrong and mistaken, but Buddha definitely taught them, but for people of these, different dispositions and different needs at different times. So do you remember the three wheels of Dharma then? Yeah? Three wheels of Dharma. So this is, the basic Tibetan way of presenting things. You can say, that in West you'll find a more historical progression of teachings, the evolution of Buddha's teachings. The development of Buddha's teachings by the scholars who come afterwards. But it's more like in the Tibetan tradition, all these teachings are taught by Buddha. So the first wheel, where's that taught? Saranath, yes. Subject? Four Noble Truths. So that's the kind of core teaching for all Buddhists, yeah? That's... if you remember the Lam Rim descriptions of the small level being, the middle level being, and the great being, if you study your Lam Rim, you've heard of those. The people who are just going for happiness in future lives, people who are going, get out of cyclic existence, get liberation for yourself, and then the people in the great scope who are trying to take on board the whole bodhicitta motivation. So they all need the four truths. But the emptiness, or the selfness, should I say, the selfness is taught at the time of the first vehicle, the first wheel. That is, that's the one that the teaching of emptiness in the second wheel, that sort of surpasses, So the selflessness of the first wheel is the sort of that level of personal selflessness there, all very important, you know, very kind of ready to be meditated on, very worthwhile, gets you out of psychic existence. But it's in the second wheel, that's when we come across the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. They're the second wheel. Yeah, so they're not talking just about personal selflessness, but emptiness, all phenomena. So we're going to have a try and meditate on that this morning. Yeah, so where was that taught? Vulture's Peak in near Rajgir. So it sounds like you've been there, have you? Yeah. Did it look like a mass of vultures to you? Mass of Vultures Mountains, the literal sort of translation of the Tibetan. No, but it's a striking place anyway, even now. It's kind of a powerful place to visit. Yeah, so we were looking at in the British Library at this Vajrakatha Sutra. So I always thought that was one of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. But actually, it says there that it's taught in Shravasti. So may not be one of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras then. It'll be in the second wheel, like pertaining to the second wheel, connected with the second wheel, but maybe not one of the cycle of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, actually. You know, you've heard of the Diamond Cutter Sutra or the Vajrakatha Sutra, so that's one that I always thought was, you know, just collected in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, but I'm not so sure now, because that was taught in Shravasti, a different place from the Master Vultures Mountain of near Rajgriha. And you remember the third wheel? Where was that taught? Not according to my understanding. We mentioned a place called Vaishali last week. It's not so well known, but it is one of the, you know, if you're doing a more extended pilgrimage, you want to go to where each of the three wheels were taught. So in India, you should head for a place called Vaishali. I think you go from Varanasi, you know, up to Patna, and you go off somewhere to the east from there. Have you been there, Mike? Vaishali? So it's in Bihar?
Yes.
UP? So I never got that one, but that's the third wheel. Subject there is the mind-only teaching. See, the teaching of the mind-only school. So also Mahayana, and definitely connected with the Perfection of Wisdom as we study it, and the Ornament of Clear Realizations, and the commentaries that we traditionally use in the Gelugpa system for explaining the ornament. You know, those are commentaries written from. Do you remember the main point of view we are following here in our investigations? Anybody do it in English? That's fine, those. Pardon? Well, we're not exactly following the third turning, because we're saying that it's the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras which are central, but yeah, we are incorporating elements of the third wheel, definitely. Our Sangha, he's promoting mind-only view, right? So that's the mind-only, so we're incorporating elements of the third wheel. But the teachings are given by Maitreya, you see, so Asanga's mind-only explanation is only one, you know, that's only one way of looking. You know, Maitreya taught not just the Ornament for Clear Realizations, but he taught, is it five great texts? So they're not all from the mind-only point of view, you know, so Maitreya's got a lot to offer. And, you know, Asanga extracts the mind-only teaching from them. But the specific point of view of the way these texts are taught, the Ornament for Clear Realizations is taught in Gelugpa system, you know, the education that all the Geshe's that come here have had, is not from the pure mind-only point of view. Jane had it right, but I just wondered if anybody could come up with it in the English. Yes. You want three, you've got three, it's a very awkward, clumsy, you know, or categorization. You've got middle way, autonomy. inconsequentialist. No, the Yogacara, yeah, yogic. Well, I refer you to our handbook, handout. We've got a handout from last month. Just got to find it amongst all our papers. Yes, finding them is difficult, isn't it? Blimey. Have you got one for yourself? I've got found mine now, it's all right. Do you remember the handout we had last time? Geshe Graham's Basic Buddhism, Maitreya's Ornament for Clear Realizations, handout one. Okay, keep that handy, we're going to be referring to it today. So we've got the first lot of clarifications underneath the introduction is on the bottom of the first page. We have those schools of tenets, yeah? Reasoned conclusions and a sort of philosophical kind of sketches, you know, sort of philosophical kind of condensations of the various teachings that Buddha gave, sort of ordered and structured so that what is the actual way to enlightenment? What do you actually need to know when you want to understand selflessness? So these schools have different ideas, you know, depending on the needs of the student. And so if you look, we've got the two individual vehicle schools, the Great Exposition School and the Sutra Follower School. So those we say the individual, you know, practitioners, the practitioners of the individual vehicle, the Hinayana vehicle. Right, so that's, you know, the teaching of the Four Noble Truths of Varanasi, Saranath. Then you've got the schools that are following the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, these sutras that Nagarjuna brings back from, you know, having been sort of, you know, left dormant for a few centuries until people are really ready for them. Nagarjuna brings them back. And then based on those teachings, we have the evolutions of the mind-only school and the middle way school. You say the middle way school comes before the mind-only school. You know, it sort of becomes the prominence, but then our Sangha brings in the mind-only view as a kind of an alternative to the sort of radical kind of nihilistic sounding kind of a middle way school for people who aren't quite ready for the sort of devastating middle way critique. He offers the middle way, the mind-only view, which is somehow a bit more kind of, you know, easier for people to sort of work with. But then, and the later scholars come along and start blending the middle way and the mind only together, you see. And so at that point you have, from the middle way schools, we've got the autonomy school and the consequence school. Right? This consequence school is the highest school, you know, which the later Tibetan tradition follows Chandrakirti, follows Nagarjuna, say his final view is the consequence school view. But there's another stream of interpretation of the emptiness in the perfection of wisdom, which is the autonomy school, not quite so radical, not quite so devastating a critique as the consequentialist. And then, so blending with that view of the middle way autonomous, you know, they bring in the yogic, the mind-only school, and sort of, you know, synthesize those two together. So mind-only and yogacara, yeah? It's yogic, the yogic practitioners, it sounds like it's some sort of school on its own or something, but that's just to be seen as, you know, part of the mind-only school. Another word for mind-only, Yogacara, also known mind-only. So we've got these texts are coming from, officially speaking, the yogic middle way autonomy school. So can you handle that? Was that already too complicated? Yeah? Don't worry. There's plenty more of that to come. So what time is our first break, Mike? Is it 11:15? Is it? 11:15, yeah. Okay, it's not long to a tea break, don't worry. Just So I've explained that quite hurriedly because I'm trying to get onto, get onto the text. But it's no use going too fast. So anybody's got any question, anybody want a clarification? Just raise your hand. We've got time to take us all along on big ferry boat to enlightenment. Don't leave anybody behind. Yeah, so we're get back to the first verse then, which we got onto at the end of our study of the verses last week. So this is the homage verse. So just remember the title, Treatise of Quintessential Instructions of the Perfection of Wisdom, Ornament for Clear Realization. So that's the title as translated by your FPMT chaps. Tosi Ji, she's in Nalanda, is she still? Or maybe she's moved on from there. Anyway, she translated a lot of this stuff for the FPMT. Very, very good work. So let's look at the homage. So trying to pack a lot of meaning into a few words, that's the essence of this kind of inspiring poetry, which is leading us into a study of this great subject. So let's read it again then. So we're talking about the mother of the Buddha. This is the person to all the references meet back to, you see. She who, as the knower of all, is she who leads the hearers seeking peace to utter peace. She who, as the knower of paths, makes those who work the good of beings achieve the world's welfare. And well endowed with whom? So here we should understand whom as to being the knower of all aspects, and well endowed with whom the sages teach on this all-aspected variety. I bow down to the mother of the Buddha and hearer, Bodhisattva companies. So we've addressing the perfection of wisdom, the mother, in three different ways here. So first of all, she is the knower of all. Now don't get to, let's get one thing straight here, right? So knower of all here, she is better known at this point as the knower of bases. So you might like to make a little note of that. Because when we get down to omniscience, the knower that the Buddhas have, knower of all aspects. Omniscience, yeah? So don't confuse this knower of all here on the first line with the knower of all aspects. So it is easy to confuse, I know. But yes, I haven't got around to explaining what the distinction is yet. But knower of bases is that one which leads the hearers, so that's the people seeking individual liberation, to their desired goal. Right? So that's the first of the three levels of the perfection of wisdom. The mother is the mother of the hearers, so that's called the knower of bases, awkwardly here known as the knower of all. But, I didn't say it was going to be easy. And the second level of her, she's called the knower of the paths. The knower of paths, so that's the one for the bodhisattvas, the one who achieve the good of all beings, the whole world's welfare. And then the third one is, the knower of all aspects, which means the omniscient one. That's the Buddha's kind of perfection of wisdom, the Buddha's mother. Yeah, so that's not mentioned by name. So you might want to put,
which one are we talking about in this fifth line? We know we're talking about the knower of all aspects. Well endowed with whom, that's the knower of all aspects. The sages, that's the Buddhas, teach on this all aspect of variety. Okay, so three levels there. So we'll look at them in detail now, but just to try and give you the structure, first of all. Knower of bases for the hearers. Knower of paths for the bodhisattvas. Knower of all aspects for the Buddhas. Okay? And then... she is the knower of bases. A bit confusingly known as the knower of all in the first line, but better to refer to her as the knower of bases. It's, you know, keep the terminology a bit more distinct. And then so finally, why are we mentioning all these three? You know, because we want to bow down to them, because they are the, that's the be-all and end-all. That's the meaning to which the composer, the author is trying to, you know, turn our minds towards. I bow down to the mother, and the Buddha, the hearer, and bodhisattva companies. Some translate it as Buddhas, many Buddhas, but it seems in the Sanskrit there's only one Buddha. If you translate from the Sanskrit. In Tibetan it's not clear. They don't have a distinction, it's singular and plural. But I think you have to imagine the Buddha, as I said, you know, Buddha's there, surrounded by his audience of his close disciples, those who have reached the level of hearers and bodhisattvas. Okay, so let's go through it in a bit more detail now, at least before tea break. Get started. So, maybe we should have our handout handy, the one we were just looking at a minute ago. If you look on the back side, you've got a mention of your three vehicles and four superiors. Okay? So that's going to be helpful to us. You know, this is the material I'm looking at as I'm trying to explain the first verse a bit more. So hearers, that might be quite a new word to you. I don't know. Yeah, you've got the page I'm referring to, the back of handout number one. Yeah. So we're all hearers. So who are these hearers who have specially to be called hearers? You know, we all hear the Dharma. So what are these people who have to be called specially be called hearers in a hearer vehicle? Well, you might not have heard of them, but if you've done the Lam Rim, which we all have, you've got to the stage of the small scope being, the middle scope being, and the great scope being. So that's how it's put in the Lam Rim, isn't it? Yeah, you've all heard of those. You've forgotten those as well. Yeah. So the hearers, those are the people who are, you know, think, well, this talk about getting out of samsara is really exciting. You know, so what I've been doing for the last, you know, several thousand lifetimes. Now here's how I do it. You know, so they understand you can go to nirvana. This is your go to your sort of personal freedom. You don't have to be born in cyclic existence anymore. Fantastic. So and then there's this means how to actually do that. And that, what is the means? Well, it's generating this knower of basis within your continuum. So that's how you do it. So the motivation is there to get rid of all this suffering that's been bothering you, and then the goal is set for you, this nirvana, complete freedom, complete cessation of suffering. See how it's put in terms of peace. Yeah? It's not in the joyful happiness sort of scenario. It's like peace, just the ending of suffering, bringing the sort of chaos of and the dismal soap opera of cyclic existence, bring it to an end, you see, then you have peace, you switch the telly off. That's good. So that's what they're seeking. They just want to go to their individual, remoteness or something. You know? So they've just abide there in meditation on selflessness. So that's their
that's as far as their imagination goes or something. You know, that's what they're ready for. That's what they're capable of. That's their sort of lineage, you know. Everybody's got Buddha nature, yeah. We'll say that if you're a Mahayanist. Everybody's got Buddha nature. But these people aren't thinking that high, are they? They're saying, just get me out of here, you know. Beam me up, sort of peace. So I can appreciate what they're thinking. So that's the middle scope being. Oh, heavens. No, I think cyclic existence, the place you go to when you get out of cyclic existence is nirvana, right? Nirvana means the end of suffering, nyangen le depa, beyond suffering, in the sort of Tibetan translation of it. Okay? So you don't have to be reborn anymore, so that's what they're striving for. So nirvana is definitely not part of cyclic existence, not part of the cycle, right? Well, no, when you put it like that, you start to get a good debate then, yeah. You can say, well, but don't say they're in cyclic existence, right? They're out of the cycle of birth and death and rebirth, uncontrolled death and rebirth, yeah? A person can still be going around from birth to birth, but they're doing deliberately out of compassion, yeah, prayer. So we're not counting those people. The people who go around in an uncontrolled fashion, you know, it's like they can't help it because they're just thrown in there by their past negative deeds and so on. So those people are in cyclic existence. So this the person who's gone to the solitary nirvana, they're definitely not in cyclic existence. They've severed they've snapped that thread that's tugging them back, you know. But you could then say, well, don't they? They've still got some obscurations. They haven't got to complete enlightenment. So aren't they enduring some subtle form of suffering? You know, we can sort of talk about what kind of obscurations they have. They have the obscurations which prevent omniscience. So they're still hindered from Buddhahood. So aren't they? Isn't that a subtle kind of suffering? You know, if you say, well, you know, the happiness of eating an ice cream on a hot day and by the seaside, if you say that's suffering, you know, if you're prepared to say ordinary happiness is suffering, well, why can't you say that the peace of the solitary kind of hero who's gone to their own nirvana, but they're still hindered from Buddhahood, that they can't get to the highest level of the perfect bliss of complete enlightenment. Isn't that a kind of subtle suffering also, you know? You could debate like that. But don't say they're in cyclic existence, yeah? And then nirvana, so you can say, yes, individual nirvana, which is where these heroes go to, this sort of remote place, or this the place where they're just out of contact, yeah? So to get to the peace, some sort of, you know, level that it really has to be just kind of a kind of, you know, actionless state or something, yeah? So in a solitary state, they call it. You know, it's not like a bunch of you on a cloud sitting there saying, oh, we made it to Nirvana. It seems like you're just there in your own personal solitary sort of space of meditate on selflessness. But then we can say there's non-abiding Nirvana. So that's the word that I introduced last week, which you didn't seem to have heard of. But what does non-abiding Nirvana refer to? Yeah. That's full, complete, perfect, 100%, you know, full Monty, yeah? Buddha's enlightenment.
So where does that term non-abiding nirvana come from? Yeah. So you've got the hearer's nirvana, which is the solitary nirvana, but in contrast to that, you can call the Buddha's enlightenment a nirvana, but you call that one non-abiding nirvana. Why is it non-abiding? Not abiding where? Not abiding in samsara, did somebody say? Yes. So you're not abiding in suffering. And? You're not abiding in nirvana either. You're not abiding in solitary peace. So you're avoiding both of those. So that's why they call it non-abiding nirvana. You're not abiding in either of those two sort of temporary locations, or sort of, you know, unsatisfactory locations from some point of view. You've got to complete enlightenment where you've reached your maximum potential to help all beings, as many beings as possible. Oh no. Yeah, a bodhisattva refuses to go to that. She avoids that kind of solitary peace because, okay, you can put your feet up and, you know, just sit there in your armchair or whatever, mental armchair as it were, but there's all those beings crying out for assistance, you see. So you can't help them from there. So the bodhisattvas remain in such existence. But they're not just remaining going round and round. Well, a lower bodhisattva will probably still be going around taking rebirth through the power of afflictions, or karma, like an ordinary being, because they've only got, say, conceptual realization of emptiness, or a weak realization. They haven't even realized emptiness yet. You can be a bodhisattva without having to realize emptiness. So low level is, they're still subject to the vicissitudes, you know. Well, you've got bodhicitta, then pretty soon it becomes firm and you're irreversible and so on. But yeah, so then you can take birth through the power of your prayers. Well, later on you might be so kind of advanced in your practice that you're able to emanate beings into cyclic existence, you know. So it all becomes different ways of being in cyclic existence. But yeah, you're in cyclic existence but not of it, you know. You're taking birth in cyclic existence, but not so much through just under, the other powered by delusion and karma, you see. So, the bodhisattvas have got different ways of, but they remain in psychic existence. Their attention is still turned towards psychic existence. Very much so.
In terms of the basis.
Yes. Well, that was the next question, but it's time for tea. So what are the bases that this hearer knows or should know? What is he learning about when he's an apprentice hearer? And what does he know when he's a fully qualified hearer? Yeah, what are the bases? So that's a question for you to discuss over your tea break. Good place to stop for a minute then. Okay, we're middle-level beings now, hearers. Middle-level, middle-scope beings. As we take our tea. Yeah, I'll have our...